twin brothers from the twins.
I'm assuming we're not doing hitter and pitcher of the week because that's been gross.
You're trying to get fresh from the
I already missed it. I already told him I'm feeling frisky tonight.
I mean, the home opener is just going to be one of those days where you just wander around and you eat and you drink and you be merry and you're running into all your other baseball friends that you haven't seen all winter long because they've been bundled up in their house with three blankets and a foot of snow. So, Twins baseball talk to contact, talk to contact. Welcome to episode 126 of Talk to Contact. This is Erolf Pleiss with me as usual is the baseball pirate Paul, Nodak Twins fan Cody Christie, and all the way from Minnetonka, J double underscore corn. Gentlemen, welcome back to the show.
Good evening. I'm not in Minnetonka tonight. I'm here downtown Minneapolis at my office. I can see Target Field from the window. It's great.
That might be the only thing great about Twins baseball so far, 3 days into the season.
As many runs scored at Target Field as the Twins have as of this moment.
Oh, good times. Good times.
So,
We need to really give these boys a scolding. I am seriously disappointed. The first 72 hours of the baseball season could it have gone any worse? Could it possibly have gone any worse?
Well, let's back up. Even before that, right? So let's just back up. Last week, we were getting ready for opening day. We did the season preview. We all made our predictions. Everything was awesome. Opening day was coming. Baseball was finally here.
Everything is awesome.
Everything is
cool when you're part of a team.
Yeah, we were singing songs. Everything was great. The very next day, Urban Santana, it comes out, he's been suspended for 80 games for Stanzolol steroid or something.
Don't do drugs, kids.
Yeah, don't do drugs. So we're going to miss the largest free agent acquisition in Twins history for 80 games. And so he'll probably be back, you know, what's that going to be?
The 4th of July, yeah.
And unfortunately for Jay, it will make him ineligible for the playoffs, so he won't be around to make that playoff push to get the Twins into the league championship series.
I hearken back to Oakland a few years ago. They started like 0-17. Oakland started like 0-17, still made the playoffs. Obviously, it's not. People are always questioning the accuracy of my statistics, and I don't understand why. So it wasn't exactly 17, but you get the point. Anyway, the Twins are not out of it even after two horrible games.
Yeah, they could still win 160 games.
Exactly.
Keep that in mind.
Yeah.
So, yeah. Yeah, I mean, Santana, stupid. It made the whole season like you're already angry. Things are going bad. I mean, I don't know. I was almost apathetic to this news. There's a lot of people that were outraged on Twitter, on some different podcasts, people complaining about this. I mean, it was almost like, else could go wrong? This season was going to be bad anyway. Now it's going to be worse. This may have pushed the Twins back into the 90 loss realm.
I had a different feeling because I had just returned home from some day drinking when the news broke. And so I had many angry tweets to send out.
Everybody should go check out Paul's timeline because that was I got a good chuckle out of some of your reaction. But I was just gonna say, you know, some of the fallout of this was Mike Pelfrey, who was very angry about being put into a bullpen role. He does end up getting a spot in the rotation then, which then kind of moved around some of the starters. Nolasco got the game two start. Gibson was pitching game three today for the Twins. And then they called up another left-hander. We had talked about last week there were only two left-handers in the bullpen for the Twins. Glenn Perkins, the closer, obviously, and then Brian Dunsing, who isn't very good at getting left-handers out anyway. So they called up Aaron Thompson then to take the place of of Irvin Santana on the 25-man roster, the active roster. So that was some of the fallout as far as roster goes. It sounds like the steroid that Santana got busted for is one of the most easily detectable steroids. It also sounds like, the end of last season, he might have been dealing with some injury stuff. The steroid stays in your body for up to 3 weeks. So maybe it was something where he was trying to take something in the off season to get himself back and healthy, and was hoping that it would be out of his system before he got that first test in spring training. And that didn't happen, folks.
Yeah, and he said he doesn't know how it happened, and yet he's not he's not appealing the suspension. So it pretty much is saying, it was some sort of freak accident. Probably Mike Pelfrey with a syringe in the in the training room.
You know, hold on a second. I want to take a second here to point out the stark difference in just 10 years can make, you know, or 12 years. I mean, this is a byproduct of a groundswell, years-long support that we wanted a clean game, right? We wanted a clean game. This is what we got. So we have a mild steroid, anybody who was trying to cheat probably wouldn't have chosen this steroid to take. But we all wanted a clean game and zero, next to zero tolerance. So when a guy pops, whether it's for unprescribed Adderall, as we saw last year with Davis in Baltimore, so, you know, any of the myriad of other things that we've seen along the way, with players from just about every team and every organization, this is what you have to suffer. I mean, this is what you have to deal
with. I don't have any problem losing Irvin Santana, because you take a team that's going to finish last in the American League, and then you ensure that they're going to finish last in the American League. So it doesn't change the outlook for the Twins. The real issues come in with the way the Twins handled it. I felt like Trevor May probably should have had that fifth starter spot before they gave it to Maloney Baloney. And then, so Irvin Santana goes down, okay, redeem yourselves, bring May up. And if you're going to put Pelfrey into the rotation for no good reason, Pelfrey, who got rocked for four home runs in a spring training start against the AA squad, then at least bring May up or Meyer up and put them in the pen where you need that long guy, which is a perfect spot to do with a starter from AAA. Bring him up, get him in low leverage situations, which we've already seen the Twins have plenty of. But no, they bring up Aaron Thompson, who wasn't even in the discussion to be the last man on the roster. So I can't understand that roster move. I mean, what about Theobald? What about Tonkin? I mean, there's so many guys ahead of Aaron Thompson.
Lefty.
The only thing Aaron Thompson does well is has long hair. He's got good flow. He's got major league flow, minor league stuff. I mean, that I can't get behind. I mean, what is this ball club doing? They just like, well, we got to have some old wily veterans. Okay, I understand you need veterans. You don't need all veterans. There's no upside with the roster.
And, you know, we were talking a few weeks ago about putting the best possible major league club on the field at the beginning of the season. And I'm with Paul on this because I don't feel like the Twins did that in this case. Now, if May lost the battle in spring training, for whatever reason, I can go with that. But to not call him up, there's got to be something we don't know. There's got to be a missing element somewhere that hasn't been made public, whatever that is, because it just doesn't make sense otherwise.
He'll be up now with whatever Nolasco's got going on, I'm sure. Because, I mean, if for those that don't know, Nolasco, I mean, got pummeled in his first start, three innings, six earned runs. But he's headed back to Minneapolis to get an MRI on his elbow. He felt something pop or felt like something was out of place in his last inning of work. This could be a situation now where, I mean, if May isn't the one called up now, then I think we really have some questions about the way this roster is being constructed, because, Alex Meyer was down there starting today for Rochester and had continues to have some control issues for that club. So that's one of the biggest things that I think the Twins are looking from him, is just some more consistency, some more control and command of that strike zone. And we didn't see that today in his first outing. So if this Nolasco thing is more of a long-term deal, or even if he just needs to be put on the DL for a couple of weeks to make sure everything squares itself away. Either way, May should be making an appearance up with the club here.
Well, it was clear. It was clear to me, and clear to anybody I think that probably saw that game. I've seen both of the games so far. Nolasco was awful. I mean, awful. I wouldn't even put him as in the category of major league like anything. There was nothing about that outing from Nolasco the other day that it was just a disaster. It was a disaster. His pitches were flat. He didn't look into the game. He looked disengaged. I could have probably. I'm not even kidding. I felt like I could be out there and get a hit out off him. I mean, it was just terrible.
Yeah, and I mean, looking at what the Twins have done so far, and Kyle Gibson just gave up a big home run, so it's now 6-0, and that big nothing is something that maybe Twins fans are getting excited about, because on opening day, the Twins went out, and in their best pitching performance of the year, managed to only give up 4 runs. Phil Hughes was less than fantastic, but wasn't terrible out there. Was hurt a little bit probably by some bad defense, which I think is another theme you're going to see us talking about as we go kind of recap these games. So 4-0 in the first game. In the second game, we already talked about Ricky Nolasco went out and in 3 innings gave up 6 runs. And that was part of a combined effort by the Twins pitching staff that saw them give up 11 runs. The offense also didn't show up. 0. Big goose egg up there.
Hasn't been to third base yet.
We almost had one that play by Cespedes out in left field. Rob Suzuki of a home run. So I'm going to give him a. Can we have a half a run?
Yeah, you could call it a double. No, you get nothing. And then today, like I just said, it's currently 6-0. Kyle Gibson doing his part to
a big stoppa.
Big floppa. It appears he hasn't maybe remembered that we needed him to have less bad outings and more good outings.
Get his bad outing out. Okay.
So this is just—it's just awful, and the Twins' offense is doing nothing. I think yesterday I went and watched the first 2 games. I didn't get a chance to watch them live, so I watched them one after another. And the Twins' outfield defense looks terrible. Danny Santana looks like he cannot get balls moving to his left up the middle. Routinely see balls going under his glove. Trevor Plouffe looks less than sharp at third base, and the pitching has just been brutal. And offensively, it looks like, guys, last year we saw people taking walks like everyone's best thing to do, just take a walk, take a walk, take a walk. We're not taking walks this year. We're being aggressive and just hitting ourselves right out of the game, short at-bats. It's ugly. There's nothing good I've seen this so far.
One other thing that I really want to highlight, as long as we're talking about all the negatives here, is it's pretty clear the American League is going to run absolutely wild on Kurt Suzuki this season. The guy just is not able to throw anybody out on the base paths. It's almost like an automatic steal when somebody gets the first, it seems.
Has anybody seen how bad Oswaldo Arcia looks in left field?
Oh, I was going to get to that.
Do you? I don't remember him being that bad in right field last season.
He's
maybe
learning a new position.
Well, I was talking at the plate. The guy is overmatched. He didn't even know he struck out the other day. I mean, the guy, I don't know where his head is, but he there's something wrong with Arcia's timing or something's going on because, I mean, you know, he just looks lost out there, both offense
and then, so you got Arcia, who can't get to anything, looks terrible. And then in center field, you got Jordan Schaefer, who looks like he just jumps and misses everything.
Gosh, he did another one today.
Just doesn't understand route running, which is maybe the biggest complaint against Hicks, but at least Aaron Hicks looks like he's athletic out there. Schaefer just looks lost. Torrey Hunter is probably the best outfielder we have right now just because he knows what to do. He just can't get to balls anymore.
Well, and, you know, we saw a ball go underneath Hunter's glove yesterday too, and I wasn't even going to ding him for that because I saw that in a few other games over the last few days as well. But Torrey Hunter let a ball roll all the way to the wall. That cost him at least 2 runs.
Yeah.
Complete system failure.
There's nothing good to talk about. The only, you know, there is one bright spot. One bright spot we got to talk about. Jimmy Graham. J.R. Graham. Was he up to two pitch? Two innings pitch. Has yet to give up a run. had a perfect one-pitch outing yesterday.
If you guys ever see, I'm going to start calling him Doc, because in the movie Field of Dreams, there's a Doc Graham. He's pretty, you know, he's the old guy that's doing the Archibald. His name is Archibald, but anyway, Graham's new name in my head is Doc.
And the other great thing about Graham is that he wears stirrups.
Yeah, stirrups.
And there's a great story behind that. His mom is visually impaired, so he wears the stirrups to make it easy for her to pick him out. So not only has he been the only bright spot, but he looks good for a good cause. I mean, Jimmy Graham's just as good as any hitter on the Twins this week, and he hasn't even picked up a bat.
Yeah, how easy has Gene Glenn's tenure been as third base coach? No one's made it to third yet, so he hasn't had to do anything over there.
Yeah, I think they've had three guys get to second, two doubles, and then two walks in a row put somebody on second in yesterday's game. So
I'm really disappointed. I really am. And, you know, to make matters worse, it's snowing right now. I'm looking outside. It's snowing here in Minneapolis. I can't believe – I mean, thank God the Twins aren't playing here. They might as well be, though, because, I mean, it's just been, like Eric said, an all-systems failure. Couldn't have gone any worse.
Yeah, wow. Does anyone have anything else? I feel like we're just going to keep complaining about what's going on in Detroit this week.
What did you guys think about the Torii Hunter situation from the end of the first opening day game? For those that, everybody should have seen it that's listening to this podcast, but the last call of the game was a pretty bad Hunter check swing and hardly move. Well, I mean, he moved a little, obviously, and Joe West rung him up without even checking with the first base at all, and Torii got in his grill pretty good. It sounds like there might be a suspension, or not a suspension, but maybe just a fine or something.
You know, they're very well, Mike, and it wasn't even what he did or didn't do on the field. It was after the game in the locker room when he was talking to the press. I mean, he really ripped into Joe West.
I think there's three things to consider here. Number one, Joe West is terrible and continues to be terrible, continually rated as one of the worst umpires in the league. Number two, that was not a check swing. No way. Torii Hunter was definitely out of line with what he did going after Joe West there after the game, getting up in his face. I understand that. Whatever, he was upset. And then the comments after the game, I wasn't so worried about those. But where was Paul Molitor? Where's the manager to come out and go after his guy? Is this Paul Molitor's inexperience? Does he not know what he's doing? Has he never managed before at any level?
He looked really confused in the dugout, like as it was happening. Like he was on the top step when they finally did show him, and he looked like should I go out there or should I not go out there? The game's over. Do I try and get support my player here?
That would have been a Guardy meltdown opportunity. Guardy would have been out there kicking dirt on Joe West's shoes, and you know, and here's the narrative. The narrative would have been Guardy goes out there to protect his player. Right? I mean, that's what would have happened. Guardy would have got in between Hunter and West and made it a big scene and then said, oh, you know, I just got to go out there. You can't have that. Oh, Torii, putting a Y on everything. And, you know, so I don't know. I think Molitor played it about the only way you could. I certainly thought he looked lost in game two, though, with, you know, another rookie mistake for him, I guess. So the Twins are down 6-0, and Paul Molitor issues an intentional walk to set up a double play with a guy on third. So what is he doing?
I think he's doing – okay, well, I mean, I think that's a little bit unfair. I think what he's doing is –
you're down by six. The win probability is already, like, zero.
He's just sending a message that we don't give up. You know, we're going to set up.
We just give away free passes. Free passes. We're not giving up. We're just giving bases away.
I'm not going to kill him for giving up that intentional walk. I know Twitter did, but I don't have a huge problem with that. We saw was it Dallas Keuchel from the Astros get pulled after almost like, you know, he pitched like eight and something innings and the dude came out there. Maybe it was in LA. I forget. But, I mean, you know, the managers are there. It's early in the season. They're just trying to send messages to their team. You know, we're not going to give up. Even though we're down six runs in the seventh inning, we're going to, you know, we're still going to play ball.
Yeah, I don't know.
I'm more concerned with his some of his lineup choices so far. You know, like we saw Arcia play the first two games against some tougher pitches, some left-handed pitchers, and then he gets a break today against a righty that isn't so great. You know, that those decisions are what I'm more worried about, especially when we got guys that are supposed to be, you know, if they're really going to go with a platoon-type system. We haven't even seen Shane Robinson at all in any of the games yet. So there's been more questions about the lineup construction even than some of his in-games.
Well, yeah, and especially more concerning because Molitor talked a lot this spring about liking platoons and being a fan of platoons and looking for ways to do that. And then we got nothing. So, and certainly there's going to be some learning that happens, and luckily the Twins are bad already. Sorry, we got some mail at our house. It's very distracting.
So I guess, what are the good, what good things can we take away? I mean, we got the chance to see a new toy, Tim Stauffer. Not very exciting. We got to see Blaine Boyer go out there. Maybe more exciting, but still not good. I mean, I'm searching for good things that happened.
I mean, to really be honest with you, there's not a lot.
And I mean, even Joe Mauer's beard is pathetic.
I was going to talk about Joe's facial hair situation. I'd give it like a B. I think a flat B.
Yeah.
We hardly have guys with multiple hits yet. Schaefer's got two, Mauer's got two. This might have been coming into today's game. I don't know how updated these are, but Eduardo Nunez batting a thousand.
Well, hold on a second. Did you guys happen to see? You know, Torrey did make a nice catch yesterday in that second game of the year. He went back to his glove side towards center field, made a nice reaching running catch against the wall. That was kind of that impressed me a little bit. No?
No.
Cricket?
Sure. It's fine.
Okay.
I mean,
we were killing him for his defense. We were saying how absolutely positively bad his defense was going to be. And aside from that one ball getting under his glove, which, again, I saw in multiple different right field situations over the last few days, Torrey's been okay in right field. He's been all right.
He's made 9 out of 10 chances. Congratulations. 90%.
You asked for positive things.
I think the thing about Torrey is that it's going to be hard to see when he's terrible because he's lost the step, so he plays further back to get balls that would be over his head, so he lets a lot of singles drop in front of him. So it looks like he's still playing an adequate field. He's just not covering the ground. He's not getting the job done out there. I mean, I wish the Twins would go out and make a trade, bring back Ben Revere. Ben Revere's playing left field for the Phillies right now. I mean, how great would it be to see Ben Revere out in center field instead of Jordan Schaefer jumping around like a hoo-ha?
Well, you wouldn't have Trevor May waiting in the wings if that were the case.
No, I'm not saying you don't make the same trade in reverse. I'm saying because Ben Revere doesn't cost a Trevor May anymore. Ben Revere isn't even a starting center fielder for the Phillies right now, who have nothing. So you could probably get Ben Revere for a couple of B-level prospects or just assume his salary.
Maybe.
Well, and then down in the minor leagues today, we saw Mr. Hicks have himself quite a game in Rochester. Went 2 for 3, reached base in 4 out of his 5 plate appearances, scored 3 runs, hit a home run, made an outstanding full layout, over the shoulder catch that was pretty sweet. So maybe it's a situation where, you know, if Hicksy finally has his poop in a group, he can get himself up here and, you know, look like an everyday player.
Well, I mean, they're gonna have to do something soon, especially if we're gonna have some injuries. This Nolasco situation is concerning. There could be some roster spots opening up, and whether that's a pitcher or Hicks or somebody else, they can't go much. They can't be outscored 20-0 and not do anything after the first series. There's got to be something. I would think. No.
So I mean, I guess the optimist says this is just small sample size. The Twins are starting out on a team-wide slump. Things aren't going well defensively. They're not going well offensively. Not on the pitcher's mound. But it's all going to even out. We just got to get some more innings underway. Is there something wrong right now? Is there a problem in the clubhouse? Or are we still at the point where hopefully Paul Molitor and the rest of that coaching staff can keep it from going in the tank this early?
The Chicago series, this next series, is gonna answer that question for me anyway. If they can win two out of three, or even somehow manage, you know, a competitive three games at this point, would be a victory coming back home. So if this continues into the Chicago series, I'd say we have something to seriously. But if we can have there some sort of semblance of a major league team take the field in Chicago, my nerves will be calmed down a little bit.
It is going to be tough with the Twins are going to see Jeff Samardzija in the second game of the White Sox series and Chris Sale in the Sunday game right before the home opener. So it's not like the pitching that the Twins are going to see is going to get much easier. We got a Tommy Malone, Hector Nuezi matchup, a Pelfrey-Samardzija matchup, and then a Hughes versus Sale, both opening day starters matching up again on Sunday. So things aren't getting any easier here to score any runs.
No, and they're not gonna. I had a chance to watch the Royals the other day. It was a game they won. I think they're 3-0 at this point. Hosmer has started hot. That Royals team, for as much as we thought that they were gonna regress a little bit, looks real good out of the gate.
Yeah, I mean, it's going to be a tough start for the Twins, but I think I'm concerned that they're just not hitting. So they had like 5 hits in the first game. They had 4 hits yesterday. They're halfway through today's game. They've only got 3 hits. You know, they haven't had a guy to third base. Sure, some of that is they're all for, 5 or 6 or 7 with guys in scoring position, with a guy at second base. But there's just not been the opportunities for scoring, and they've played against some good hitters and maybe a victim of a little bit of bad luck here and there, but it's scary how bad that they've looked at the plate as well. We talked about Arcia looking a little bit lost, but I haven't seen, anything that says, hey, we know what we're doing. We're not going to panic. Yesterday there was talk that there was still a light mood and there wasn't any dread or fear of dread in the clubhouse yet, but if you get your butt kicked the first two games of the season, maybe panic a little bit. Maybe some old guys, maybe this is time for Tori to say, get your ass in gear, turn off the fucking music and get to work tomorrow. I mean, I don't know.
Who does Hunter have to punch to get some runs across the plate?
I mean, it's opening day, you could say, okay, you know what? David Price went out there. He was masterful. He kind of chalked that one up okay. Anibal Sanchez comes in the next day, spinning pretty breaking balls and just gets it done again, starting to worry a little bit. And then, I mean, you get Green out there today, who I think, was very promising in short duty we saw with New York last year. And he continues to baffle the Twins hitters. Eric, like you said, there's just no opportunities. People aren't even – I don't even feel like they're having competitive at-bats. And I mean, they're not, quote-unquote, grinding it out, whatever that means. They're just giving away at-bats. Just here's an out, here's an out, here's an out. And this is an offense coming into the season that I think we all expected to be a lot better than this. They're really the strong point of the team. Could they score enough runs – to overcome the pitching difficulties, but here we see they can't even score one run.
Well, and how bad does it, pitching get all of a sudden when you take out Ervin Santana for half a year, and now you're back to Mike Pelfrey, and you're back to, Aaron Thompson's a guy that's up, and you still don't have any of your upside up in that rotation. It just got, everyone got one position worse.
I guess what I was going to say, though, is that I didn't think Hughes was terrible. He had 1 3-run inning, but he had 6 strikeouts and 6 innings. He had somebody hit a home run, I think. I didn't think Hughes was horrible. He only, they only let him go to 6. I think he was better than average. And I wasn't, like you said, Price went out there and pitched well. So I'm, you know, this whole time we've been kind of talking the last 10 minutes or so, I've been thinking of positives. I didn't think Hughes was horrible. I thought he was halfway. I thought he was good.
I agree. I mean, I thought Hughes looked fine out there. He was facing a very potent lineup, probably one of the best middle of the orders in all of baseball. And he got victimized by a couple of long balls, which is something that Phil Hughes is known to be done. I mean, last year was the first time he didn't give up more than one home run per nine. So Phil Hughes was Phil Hughes, six strikeouts, one walk. I was pleased with the effort. But when you give up, you know, that many runs and your offense just kind of stays in the dugout, nothing to be done there.
Yeah, you could tell there was just some, you know, it doesn't have the feel of all his pitches yet this early part of the season. I mean, there were just some of his pitches were just left up, and that's where we saw a few of those balls leave the yard. So it was, I mean, out of all the starters, it was obviously, one of the best, the best start that we've had out of the three games so far. Needs to continue to improve. But, yeah, he wasn't going to get the win anyway without any runs crossing the plate.
Yeah, nobody wins when you don't score any runs. But it's just been frustrating. So, I don't know. The Twins probably aren't a dumpster fire. they're not going to never score a run. But man, has it just been the last week with, you know, you go from Santana to shutout again, and it's just tough.
It's more amplified that we aren't scoring runs and guys aren't getting to third base and the pitching has been bad. It's more amplified because we're so early in the season. You know, it's not like if this happened in the middle of June for three game stretch, you'd be like, oh yeah, whatever. Where we're just, this is all we have to go on so far. So it seems like it's going to be never ending. But by the time most people listen to this podcast, hopefully, the Twins have awakened from their winter slumber here and has started to do some positive things.
Yeah. I mean, better days are ahead. The home opener is coming up on Monday afternoon. The Twins have a whole freaking...
Are you going to the home opener, Eric?
Yeah, I think I'll be at the home opener. Cody will be there. Jay, you're going to be there. I think I owe you a nachos.
You owe me a nacho.
but, I mean, good things are coming up besides just nachos. The Twins have a whole day of events planned for the home opener. I think starting at like 8 o'clock, you can go over to Target Field and get some pancakes. And there's music and stuff playing around at Target Field Station. They're going to have little food stuff all day. There's going to be beer over there. You can bring your own beer if you sneak it in your shirt.
A lot of the radio, local radio, sports radio will be doing shows from some of the bars down there. There'll be a lot going on in that area down around Target Field for all day. It's nice middle of the afternoon games. You can get down there, you know, early, grab some lunch somewhere,
yeah,
get into the stadium a little early.
65 degrees and sunny after, you know, we've been having 35 degree days and it's snowing like right now, as Jay said. I mean, it's shaping up to be a wonderful day for Twins baseball on Monday. And if they can just, you know, win two games this weekend, I think some excitement will be back. The home opener is going to be a special day. Exciting things are happening. And we're all going to be there. And then there's some exciting new food at the ballpark as well. I mean, I don't know if you guys saw all the tweets and stories coming out after they had the new food day at Target Field on Tuesday. But there's all kinds of good stuff coming up there. And there's going to be more local craft beers. There's going to be some of those local whiskeys and things like that. So if you like to eat nachos and get hammered, it's going to be a good time.
What is a Red Cow cart?
It's a burger.
Find out for you.
It's a burger place.
Yeah, they mix bacon in with their hamburger.
Yeah. Yeah, it's like, is it like 60-40 or like, it's like 80-20 maybe? Like 80% beef and then 20% bacon or something? Like,
yeah, and they grind it all up together. I think they had them, I ran a 5K that last fall. It was a bacon chase. And they had some of these bacon and beef burgers at the finish line, and it's a pretty tasty way to do a hamburger.
I think that anytime you can, I don't know why they don't take more ingredients. And we got the Juicy Lucy with the cheese inside to put the bacon in it. I mean, you could cut.
We need a red cow Lucy.
You can put onions in it. You put it all into the patty. Cook it up. It saves on post cooking, you know, manicuring of your burger because it's already ready already. You put a little dry mustard powder in there. Some tomatoes. You put everything in before you cook it.
Yeah, so a little bit of Worcestershire. Got to get some Worcestershire in there. That's a secret to any good hamburger.
The one thing getting the most publicity, even on some national blogs, has been the Twins are introducing a new Bloody Mary called a College Days Bloody Mary, and it has all the normal, you know, vegetables and some pepper jack cheese and celery and salami, but the thing that makes it College Days is there's a slice of pizza with it as well. But it'll cost you basically $20 bill to indulge one of those Bloody Marys. So
you know, I can't tell you how many times I've been having a Bloody Mary and thinking, man, I just love to dunk a piece of pizza right into this thing. Soggy pizza with tomato juice? Sign me up.
There's a lot of good stuff out there. Let's not forget the self-dispensing beer machines that were installed late last season. I'll give the Twins a lot of credit on one account, is that they've really incorporated a lot of local restaurants, local breweries, local food producers, even food trucks and chefs. They've done probably as good a job as anybody in baseball on that stuff.
And there's also a new bar, right, on the first level under the roof deck over there in the outfield. They've installed a new a bar where you can kind of, you know, it's very wide open still, so you can walk up into it and still be watching the game, but being kind of in like a bar-type atmosphere. So, something new to check out.
Those, you know, that Two Gingers bar that they have on the second level, and they have one or two other ones that have been super, super popular. I mean, if you don't get a spot in there a half hour before first pitch, you might as well just stand. So I think they've kind of spun off that a little bit. I can't envision how this new bar Cody's talking about is looking, but I'm anxious to check it out.
Yeah, there's going to be a lot of good stuff. I mean, the home opener is just going to be one of those days where you just wander around and you eat and you drink and you be merry and you're running into all your other baseball friends that you haven't seen all winter long because they've been bundled up in their house with three blankets and a foot of snow. So it's going to be a good time.
Everybody
get hoodies.
So that's fun.
So yeah, show up early.
And by the way, I can't imagine that being anything less than a madhouse. They only have two sizes. It's like medium and extra large or something like that. And everybody's supposed to get one. I mean, I just don't see this ending well.
If you're there at 12:30 or whenever gates open, you can get whatever you want.
Yeah.
I guess.
And I tell you what, here's a pro tip if you're going to the ballpark earlier and you're trying to avoid a line. If you go to the back side of the stadium where the rail comes in, if you get there early, there's almost never a line right before gates open until like 10 minutes before. Because people taking the train don't show up early. Everybody's walking up, driving up. They're all coming to the other sides of the ballpark. So that back side where the rail is, if you're hoping to avoid a line and a mess, that's the place to be.
That one's the best one. The secondary best choice would be the Skyway entrance. I'm not sure what side of the park that's on, but there's a Skyway entrance from Ramp A that's also usually less crowded. But Eric's right. The Target Field rails, light rail station is the best way to get in on these giveaway days.
Other Twins type news that to go along with this year's All-Star game, they've released these ballots for each team where you kind of get to pick out you'd call like the Mount Rushmore. They're calling it the Franchise Four. So you're supposed to vote on the four players that have had the biggest impact on any given franchise, and they have you a selection of seven or eight guys that you can pick out of, or you can write in names. But
are we going to do this?
So the ones on the Twins ballot, hold your roll, Jay. Geez, We got Mr. Blylevin, Rod Carew, Walter Johnson makes the ballot from the Twins' earlier days in Washington, the earlier days of the franchise.
And the Twins don't usually even acknowledge that, so that's an interesting guy there.
Yeah, definitely. But one of the all-time greats, so I'm assuming Major League Baseball just wanted him on a ballot somewhere. And it happened to be with the Twins. So then the rest of the ballot, Jim Cott makes it. Harmon Killebrew makes it. The only current player, Joe Mauer, is also on the ballot. And then rounding out the ballot, the last couple spots, Tony Oliva and Kirby Puckett. So all of the retired numbers for the Twins out of their players. And then a
Except
couple other
Herbeck,
guys.
Right? Herbeck's
Oh, yeah. Herbeck's not in there. Yep. But Mauer and Cott and Johnson obviously don't have their numbers retired by the Twins either. So, it's going to be interesting to see how this turns out. There's ballots like this for all the teams. There's also some extra ballots. There's a Negro League ballot. There's a I don't remember what it's even called, like the some of the really early players of the game. And then there's one for the greatest living players. Guys like Willie Mays, Hank Aaron, Johnny Bench, even Barry Bonds is on the ballot, which I thought
he should be.
Well, definitely, but I find it interesting that Major League Baseball included him, I guess, because it sounds like the people that are picked out will be honored at the All-Star game. So I know Bonds has been involved in baseball and stuff still, who do we think our four franchise four are from Minnesota?
Well, I think you really only get to choose two, because Kirby Puckett and Harmon Killebrew are in.
Are locked.
Those are no-brainers. And then I really think that after that, Rod Carew, you'd have to argue really hard to not put him in. So there's, what, one spot left?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I don't know.
I've seen arguments made for Oliva. Just because he's been around the Twins and has continued to make an impact even after his career was shortened by injury. If you look at the numbers, though, you know, someone like Blylevin obviously had quite the career in baseball. So maybe someone like him, and because fans still have a connection to him through his announcing. But then, I mean, it's hard to ignore, you know, Mauer's numbers either. I think according to FanGraphs, wins above replacement, he's actually like the third best all time for Twins hitters. So that's would be interesting to see how he finishes as well.
And then you got Walter Johnson, who I think belongs more to the Nationals franchise than the Twins. Because I really feel like a player belongs more to the city that he plays in than to the franchise that moved around. The Twins have never really expressed any interest in trying to honor the guys that didn't play in Minnesota. There's no national players or senator players in the Twins Hall of Fame. So I don't think that, despite Walter Johnson's greatness across all of baseball, that he has any place being franchised for in the Twins.
Yeah, I don't think he'll get in either.
I don't think he will either, and I wouldn't vote for Walter Johnson. I'd go with Puckett, Killebrew, Mauer. And, you know, that my fourth vote would be a little bit tough, but I'd go with Carew. I mean, he's a Hall of Famer. It's hard to ignore that. And I'd pick Mauer over Blylevin, actually, only because I like Joe so much. Or depending on the day, you know.
Yeah, I'm adverse to picking Burt Blylevin because he's Burt Blylevin and he calls so many games. As a player, he was just absolutely phenomenal. And what he did for the franchise is, you know, and he's still around. I mean, when you think about the Twins and you're looking at names associated, he's certainly one of the guys. But I'm not picking him because
can't stand to know how many days it is till his birthday. I don't want to be circled. So you're not getting circled today, Bert. So I'm going Killebrew, Carew, Oliva, and Kirby Puckett. I mean, he's the twin of my youth, I guess I would say. So
going Tony Oliva over Joe Mauer.
Yes, absolutely.
I would do the same just because of...
Whatever.
Joe Mauer still has some time 30 left
years to finish his career and do some more baseballing and stay around the Twins before he's going on the Minnesota Twins Mount Rushmore.
I agree. He's got a lot of time left to write his story, and if he can continue to be a successful offensive player at first base, then maybe he'll merit some, you know, worthy of being put up there. But when you look at his numbers compared to some of these other guys, and you take and you don't and remember that he's not a catcher anymore, I mean, that WAR stat is heavily influenced by his ability to catch, and I think that should be remembered. But
he's a catcher. I mean, he's still a catcher.
No, he's not.
When he's over by where he plays the most.
Yeah, 10 years behind the plate. That's 10 years of elite baseball behind the plate. You can't take that away from him. But I think that when you're stacking it up against these other guys, he just for me, he's not there yet. He's not the kind of guy you put on Mount Rushmore. Not yet. So thanks, Joe. But no thanks.
He's been a part of the Twins organization, if you really think about it, since he was about 14 years old. I mean, it's kind of true, though. I mean, it's kind of true. He's been here in St. Paul. He played his high school ball here. He was drafted at 18. You know, he made his major league debut in 2001. It's been like goddamn over 15 years. So, I mean, he has put the time and service in.
Yeah, but there's more to do yet. I mean, he's not yet, you know, your grandpa's favorite player. You know, and he doesn't have that still, that after-baseball association with the Twins. So I think there's, you know, plenty of time for him to get there. I'm not saying he won't get there.
And he hasn't done – how much has he done in the postseason to really cement himself as a marquee player?
Blow.
Him and Ron Gardenhire, not too fancy when it comes to postseason ball.
Yeah, the narrative is totally different if it's Joe Mauer, Yankee killer.
Yeah.
Well, it'd help if the umpires knew what a double was and what a foul ball was.
Oh, boy. I think the umps are filing a grievance with us this week between that and the Joe West conversation earlier. So... I don't know. Lots to talk about with this Twins team. Certainly, you know, a little bit more exciting than watching spring training and talking about the guys the Twins signed that go on steroids all winter long. But
come on now,
look out! So why don't we step away from the mic real quick? We'll come back. We'll talk all about the Twins minor league rosters. We'll go AAA down all the way to Cedar Rapids and talk about who the players we're looking out for and what's gonna go on this year. While the old girl gets seized, body your petitions, world in mine, and we'll be fine. Hold on, sweet Emily, hey, that was strange. As you can see, I've been.
Welcome back, everybody. Thank you for sticking with us. We have an exciting second half of the show.
We're gonna win, Twins! We're gonna score!
I didn't know Eric was going to sing, but man, it's better that he did.
Good news. Not breaking the Twins, because it's hours and hours after this happened, but the Twins have just scored a first run of the 2015 season.
On a blooper by Kenis Vargas that scored Joe Mauer from first as the Tigers outfielders dove for the ball, and it went past him.
That's Joe's answer to anybody who didn't vote for him on the top four Twins of all time. So a little mud in the eye of all three of you other than me.
He could score a run on a bad defensive play. Good.
He scored the first run of 2015. It'll live in infamy.
Right.
We all remember the first run of 2014, don't we?
I know I do. I still have dreams about it.
Those are called nightmares.
Yeah, let's move over to the minor league here and talk about a little bit about what's going on here down on the farm. So lots to talk about, lots of names, lots of guys out there. We'll start at Triple A, the Rochester Red Wings. New coaching staff in Rochester this year. Manager Mike Quadi, hitting coach Tim Doherty, and pitching coach Marty Mason will be leading the charge. And despite all the talk about this Double A team, and we're going to get there in a minute, this Triple A team has some higher end talent, some guys you definitely want to keep your eyes on. You know, Eddie Rosario is there. He made his debut this afternoon. Aaron Hicks is there, had a heck of a game today. You know, Alex Myers down there, Trevor May, Caleb Fielbar, Michael Tonkin, Josmio Pinto is there, and then probably a name you are going to hear a lot about this summer is Danny Ortiz, maybe the unknown who's going to get a little bit more time down there. But some exciting guys there, and a lot of these guys that I just mentioned are guys that will probably spend, you know, 30 games or more with the Twins before this year is over.
30 is a big number, Eric.
September is a long month.
That's true.
Yeah, we talked about Hicks and his performance already. I mean, Brock Peterson had a pretty nice game for them down there today as they won their first game of the season. Alex Meyer, I talked about his control issues a little bit today. Michael Tonkin picked up the save for Rochester today. I think it might have helped that they were going against former Twin Andrew Albert. Maybe they had a little inside information in that that outing. But, definitely some guys that are going to have an impact this year. The guy like Rosario, who's kind of been on prospect lists for a while, had that rough season last year with the suspension and coming back. But hopefully, I mean, he had a good spring, had a really good Arizona Fall League, and is a guy that I think fans are his hit tool has always been there. I think there's just been some other question marks about his game. Does he have enough power to stick in a corner outfield position at some point? Can he continue to hit as he moves up into these higher levels of the minor leagues? Because last year was really the first time we hadn't seen him hit. So it'll be interesting to see what happens with some of those guys, especially if the Twins continue to struggle to score runs. They're going to have to find an influx from somewhere, and most likely that'll be the Rochester team first before we get down to some of those bigger names at Double A.
Here's my only line of thinking on that is that if this trend continues and we seriously go on a 6-8-9 game losing streak, lose 8 out of 11 or something like that, I could see them doing something drastic, and I don't know what drastic means, but. But whether it's sending somebody down or calling somebody up or both, a drastic quote-unquote move could be on the horizon here.
Well, the outfield defense certainly makes what Hicks and Rosario do at Triple A for the next couple of weeks very, very interesting. So, you know, that and, you know, Chris Herrmann took that foul ball off his mask today and got a cut on his face, you know. Josmio Pinto could be up tomorrow. You never know what happens there. You know, it sounded like Herman cleared the concussion test, but, you know, Pinto cleared the concussion test too, and then he ended up not playing for a week and a half, 10 days after a minor incident. So you never know what happens there. These guys are, they could be up very, very quickly.
Yeah, and if those guys don't come up down in Double A, leading the charge with that offense is Twins uber prospect Byron Buxton. Manager Doug Minkiewicz with just a stacked lineup. We talked. I mean, I think they were somehow. I think it was Baseball America did a rating of the best farm systems that came out today.
Best minor league teams.
Yeah, best minor league teams. And somehow the Lookouts only placed number 2. I can't explain it. Apparently, the Pawtucket Red Sox have more top 50 prospects. I don't understand how that happened. I mean, we're talking about. I mean, Byron Buxton, Miguel Sano, Travis
Jose
Harrison,
Berrios.
Adam Brett Walker, Jose Berrios, Nick Birdy, Stuart Turner, a little bit of upside we saw returning from Levi Michael. I mean, And you got Dougie Baseball down there managing the team that he's seen just dominate the minor leagues, mostly as a unit together. And hey, man, if Paul Molitor forgets how to manage for a year, I mean, Dougie Baseball is going to get it done in Double-A again this year. I mean, that's just another feather in his cap. And if the Twins are ready to move on after another 90-loss season, should the season go that way, whew, man, bring them all up. Bring up that whole Double-A roster. Everybody, yep. All those pitchers down in AAA, let's just have a fire sale. Let the kids play, because we have the young guns. And even if only half of them stick, you still got something special coming up.
When I was putting these names together, there's guys I left off the list that I really like. Maybe the rose is off their bloom a little bit, but Alex Wimmers, you remember him, first round draft pick out of the Ohio State University. Ended up with the yips and couldn't throw a ball to save his life to the catcher. Sounds like he's finally put it all back together and is healthy, and he's going to start the year at Double-A. So he's a guy that could move quickly and be part of Triple-A pretty soon. And you know, there's just a lot of guys there. Dalton Hicks is a guy. You know, Jorge Polanco. I mean, the only thing, this team has only three outfielders. Three true outfielders looking at their roster. Buxton, Harrison, and Adam Brett Walker. So, I mean, they're going to get playing time down there, and it's going to be a fun outfield to watch.
Can I add this? Lookout season is sometime here in mid-April. I don't know, April 15th or something like that. We're talking a Double-A expansion team, okay? So,
expansion team?
Well, you know, for organizational. I mean, this is a new shift here, and they've sold out this is a minor league ball club that has sold out the entire first two levels for opening day. Now, mind you can still get in for between five and nine dollars. That's what a minor league, the best seat in the ballpark is $9. So I mean, if you're in Chattanooga this year and you want to see some great baseball for cheap, you can sit right behind the dugout for $9 at most games. But for opening day, this team has sold out. I don't know what the capacity is here, but you can only get a general admission standing only. So good for the lookout.
Here's the deal. It is about 1,000 miles from Minneapolis to Chattanooga.
Hey, people
by road.
Places for different reasons. You can end up in Chattanooga tomorrow. You're going to Illinois in like 2 months.
And you could fly there. You could get on a plane right now for about $300 and be in Chattanooga and watching the lookouts for this weekend. So if you feel like making a road trip, or a plane trip or something. You want to see those guys. Cause they're not going to last long, right? They're like Pokemon. Isn't that what they say? Catch them all, right? You got to catch them before they're gone, because this Lookouts team is special right now, but they're going to be promoting guys to the Twins and the Triple-A probably within 6 weeks, I'd guess, before kids are out of school for the summer.
You know, hold on. I just want to add something real quick before I let Cody. It's not just opening day. They've sold out the bottom level I'm doing some quick looking here on the fly. For the first 11 games, you cannot get a lower deck Chattanooga Lookouts ticket.
It's pretty good.
Yeah, I think that speaks to exactly what Eric was talking about. Those guys aren't going to be there for long, and if you want to see them all in one shot, I know there's a lot of Twins fans across the country that want to get down there. I mean, like I said, this is a stacked team, and you get a chance to see some elite-level prospects all in one place. That's something pretty special.
And I'm actually through May. I'm going here through the schedule. I'm through May, and they don't have a lower-level ticket available from the team. Now, and, you know, they haven't gone on StubHub yet or anything like that. But through May, the Chattanooga Lookouts have sold out the bottom level of the stadium.
I think if you look at those guys we mentioned, too, I mean, we talked about how they might be fast movers and whatnot. But I think some of those guys, I mean, realistically, it could be at the major league level now and holding their own. Berrios, Birdie, Stuart Turner, Levi Michael, Sano, Buxton. I mean, some
Levi
of those guys.
Michael. Oh, that's a stretch. But yeah, certainly those other guys.
Well, Michael would be like a backup infielder because that's all he's ever going to be, but he could do that.
He could be Eduardo Nunez.
Yeah. And have at least a semblance of some upside left.
Exactly.
So going down to the high A level, so the Fort Myers Miracle coming off their Florida State League championship from last year. Obviously, there's some new blood there, new manager Jeff Smith, some other new coaches down at that level, but we got some
The most important name, Cody, though, of all the players at high A this year, a man after our own hearts, the Talk to Contact number one fan club, Ethan Mildred.
Hey, you know what? To our credit, has anybody ever even called and cared to talk to Ethan? No, but Talk to Contact did.
That's right. Ethan Mildred fan club. We're probably due to have Ethan back on the show.
You know, we got to do it. You know, starting next week, I'm going to go out on a limb here. I'm going to put my little tushy on the line after a couple beers. Next week, we are going to have a player from the Twins minor on the Talk to Contact podcast.
All Ethan Mildred all the time.
We got to get Big Velo on is what we got
to
get.
Oh, Big Velo, yeah. We got to get him before he gets up to the big leagues.
Yeah, very cool. So some other guys down there, Ryan Eads, a guy to watch on the mound. Chai Wee Hugh, guy that kind of he surprised me last year with his performance on the mound.
Right?
Yeah, definitely. I back at the high A level, but did some very good things for Cedar Rapids last year. It was a guy to me that came a little bit out of nowhere. Max Kepler, obviously a guy already on the Twins 40-man roster. The Twins have sent him to the Arizona Fall League and keep pushing him and keep wanting to see more out of him. This is kind of a pivotal year for him, I feel like, because he's already on the 40-man. They can only option him so much. They got to see some progression and see him getting closer to major league ready so that he can fit somewhere on this roster within the next year or two. Mitch Garver.
Can we spend 30 seconds on Max Kepler? Because it seems every week he becomes more and more like an Aaron Hicks Jr., only in the minor leagues.
No. He's only like 12 years old, though. Right? I mean, the Twins signed Kepler when he was 16 out of Germany.
I feel like I've been hearing about Max Kepler for the last, like, 3 years. He's yet to really wow us. I mean, has he wowed us?
No, but he was a baby.
Yeah, I was going to say his age compared to level of talent, he's always been young for the league, and he's doing enough. I mean, we saw him. He came up as an outfield, center field prospect, and now he's just grown. Is a heck of a young man. He's a big guy, and it looks like they're going to be putting him at the hot corner there, at first base, not the hot corner. And I mean, so he's been moving all over the diamond. He continues to produce offensively, and I think that the fact that he's only in high A this year and not up in double A is maybe has a lot more to do with having how much depth and plus talent the Twins have in their organization more than the fact, you know, than his talent level right now.
Yeah, I need something out of Max Kepler this year.
Here's the Kepler line. So he is going to be in his age 22 season and playing, you know, he's playing
repeating.
Repeating high A, but he could move quickly. He played 62 games there last year, but he had a .330 on base last year. He had, you know, a .387 in 2012 in the Appy League. He had a .312 in the Midwest League in 13. You know, so he's a guy that's been moving through the system regularly and advancing and continuing to have, you know, a decent on base percentage and hit the ball well, and all while being a year to 2 years younger at every stop along the way in the minor league system. So you've certainly been hearing about him for a long time, and he's been in the system for a long time. But this is a guy, like Cody said, he's on the 40-man roster. If he moves a level and a half this year, if he gets to AAA by the end of the year, he's a guy that's competing for a spot in spring training next year.
And his one rough year was 2013. As a 20-year-old, he had some injuries, only got into 60 games at low A, but that's all he's ever played at that level. You know, his batting average and some of his other numbers were down that year. So I think it's good that he's repeating high A. And as we've said, he's a guy that, you know, could be up at double A once some of those stacked players make that jump to the next level. And working with Mankiewicz again could be good for him. So
you know what I see out of Max Kepler? I see him being a part of a package deal to another team for whether it's an established major league player. I see him being involved in a trade. Mark my words, Max Kepler will be traded within the next 18 months.
Ooh, that's quite a statement, Jay.
I hope you're wrong.
But at the same time, he doesn't fit into the Twins' outfield plans right now, right? So, I mean, he could be a guy, and if he goes big all of a sudden here this year, he could be an attractive kid out there, but you never know.
It's also a guy that could end up being taken off the 40-man and exposed to waivers, too, if he has a crummy year. So there could be two sides to that coin. Also, guys at that level, Nico Goodrum is a guy to watch, another infielder who was a higher draft pick for the Twins within the last handful of years. Mitch Garver's at that level. Cole Stewart, obviously a very well-thought-of Twins prospect that we've talked about on this show at length.
Big Cole Stewart fan. I mean, I it's the antithesis of what I feel about Kepler. I think Cole Stewart really has a big upside for the Twins.
Yep, and you know, maybe a guy that we saw some really good things out of Jose Berrios last year, starting at this level. Maybe it's another situation where we could see Cole Stewart get off to a hot start here down in Florida and be up. Even at the double A level in the second half of this season and be.
How old is Cole Stewart?
Not 20 ish, 19 or 20. I mean, because we drafted him straight out of high school, so he would have been roughly, he's already 20. His birthday was in October, so this is his age 20 season. He's been over 2.5 years younger than the competition at every level. He was 3 years younger than the other pitchers within the Midwest League last year. So he'll be probably about the same difference this year. Pitching against some guys that are a lot older than him and definitely holding his own. So a guy that a lot of Twins fans will keep an eye on at that level. So flying down then, our last team we need to talk about, not as many guys to watch down at this level. The Twins in Cedar Rapids, managed by Jake Mauer. The big name here, obviously, is last year's first-round pick, Nick Gordon, will be starting the year here. They've moved Gordon fairly quickly, I guess. I mean, he skipped the GCL, went straight to Elizabethton, helped them get into the playoffs, and then suffered a broken finger near the end of the season last year. Will definitely be the one guy that a lot of people are keeping an eye on at that level. Some other guys at that level, Felix Jorge is a guy I'm a little bit higher on than a lot of other guys that look at the Twins minor league system. I think I had him in my top 20 prospects, and Seth and Jeremy ridiculed me a little bit for that. But sometimes you got to take a flyer on a guy that has some decent stuff and could still break out. Max Murphy's at that level. That's Jeremy Nygaard has a huge man crush on Max Murphy.
I think that really all four of the outfielders down there are pretty good prospects, or at least, you know, people that you should be watching. You got Max Murphy, Zach Larson, Zach Granick, and Tanner English. I'm pretty excited about that outfield. So Colonel should have a nice outfield display there early in the season.
You know, and guys, I'm excited about the Colonels because I got this brand new Cedar Rapids Colonels cap. It finally came in the mail today. I don't know if you guys have seen this cap. It might be the most beautiful cap in all of Twins farm system. It's the Colonel's alternate cap. It's dark blue. It's got in white letters. It has a CR on it in a very, I don't know.
arty script, and it's outlined in red. No Pasoda gold anywhere to be seen. It's a beautiful cap. I talked to Steve Buehr, Jim Cricket, if you know him from Twitter, about this cap because he's down there watching the Colonels all the time. He says they very rarely wear this cap. But I'm going out. This is the best-looking hat in the Twins system. And with the Twins adding Casota Gold to their cap right now, this is the best-looking Twins hat in all of Twins territory.
It's very old school.
It is. I mean, it's okay. It's wearable. But
it's okay.
Jay,
you've been wearing a farmer hat for like 3 weeks with the mesh in the back. It's got some kind of H on the front for hillbilly.
It's a Harriet Brewing hat. And by the way, I much prefer Paul's Chattanooga Lookouts hat. Way, way higher.
Disagree strongly. It goes Rapids with this hat. Then just about anything that the Lookouts are bringing. The Lookouts have great, their home hat, their road hat, all their alternate caps are fantastic. And then probably the Twins. And let me tell you, the miracle, they got the cool hat with the M and the palm tree, but they got no cool alternates. And the Red Wings, their hat game is just terrible.
The Red Wings do have one good hat. They've got their black hat with the R on it. It looks very similar to the Rainier beer R.
You like that thing?
And that's a nice cap. But why would I get that cap when I can go down to Tacoma, Washington, 40 minutes down the road, and get a Tacoma Rainier's hat that looks exactly the same as the Rainier R on the beer that I'm drinking right now? That's their only good hat, but I don't think that the Cedar Rapids cap there. Mr. Shucks, I feel like, could be so much better than he is.
Put Mr. Shucks on a hat.
Mr. Shucks is on a hat. He's on two hats.
Oh, yeah, but in a crappy way. Anyways, that's my cap conversation.
Our discussion about the Cedar Rapids Colonels devolved into a discussion. We went from Cole Stewart to how crappy some of their hats are.
So I guess what we're saying that is, if you're in Cedar Rapids, when you get tired of watching Nick Gordon do his thing, maybe we need somebody else to show up and sparkle just a little bit.
Yeah, Gonsalves is the guy that I'm watching in that rotation, along with Felix Jorge, or George, or however you say that.
All right. Well, usually at this time of the podcast, we would do a pitcher and hitter of the week. however, there's no pitcher worth remarking about. And
J.R. Graham, honorable mention.
And hitter of the week, I'm not sure whether we should give Kenny's Vargas the honorable mention for knocking in Joe Mauer.
It wasn't an RBI, though.
Well, then we'll just move on from the situation here. And we will go to Jake Horn's favorite segment of the week, beers from around the world.
Around the world.
And as I already mentioned, I'm drinking a Rainier beer, a Rainier Tall Boy. My mother-in-law was in town about a week ago, and I went out and bought myself a sixer of Tall Boys to get through that experience, finishing off the last one today.
Well, I'll go next. It's not from around the world. It's from around the corner. But we actually just got a Coburn's delivery today here in the office where I'm recording from. So I'm finishing up the Sweet Child of Vines from the Fulton Brewery Company, which I can literally see here from my office window. I don't normally like these IPAs. I know you guys really do, but this Child of Vine, Sweet Child of Vine, is particularly good. I know most of you have had it before.
Yep, that's a good one. I got nothing against that. I'm drinking a vodka Red Bull because people like to get super high on Red Bull in the middle of the week before they go to sleep at 8:30.
Jeez. Okay. I'm on my way out the door to coach basketball, so I'm not drinking anything.
Gatorade!
Yeah.
Don't want to incriminate yourself.
Yeah, definitely. So let's jump into around the league segment. We've had some real baseball. We've had some other things happening around the league. Let's jump in down there. I know Wrigley Field opened play this week on Sunday night, their game with the Cardinals. The stadium is not close to being ready for baseball games, but they're playing there anyway. People started urinating everywhere because the bathroom lines were too long. And people just started peeing in the corners and in beer cups. And
do it too.
It sounded...
Paul, you know you'd be peeing in the hallway. You know you would be.
Yeah, it's just a mess. I mean, they put those nice tarps up over the outfield bleachers where the bleachers are supposed to be. But, I mean, if you love Wrigley Field is already a dump. And this is even worse. I love going to watch games at Wrigley because it's old and there's beautiful women there. And it's a pretty place to watch a game. But that field's been a dump. The fact that they're not even close to being ready, they're not even putting in the first section of bleachers until mid to late May. They won't finish the outfield bleachers until June. I mean, this is just, it's ridiculous. MLB probably should have stepped in and said, guess what, you're playing somewhere else all season long. This is a joke.
I you know what, I agree wholeheartedly. When you have people peeing in the atrium, you know there's a problem.
Ugh.
Yeah. So the Padres keep playing with the cheat coats on, I'm pretty sure.
Hold on a second, because that's where I wanted to go with this around the league segment is the Padres. The Padres are for real. I mean, I've watched actually two of their first three games.
You know what you should have noticed watching the Padres? Adrian Gonzalez of the Dodgers just going ham.
I was going to go there. Adrian Gonzalez, I mean, that's a historic start to the season. 5 home runs in 3 games or something crazy. But the Padres, I've been super impressed with. That rotation is for real. They've got Kimbrel at the back end now. Kemp is going to have a good year. Watch out for the Padres. Watch out for the Cincinnati Reds.
Yeah, definitely. I think they surprised all of baseball making that deal.
Did you just squeeze in a watch out Cincinnati Reds?
I did. But hold on a second. They got the other Upton brother. The Upton brothers are reunited.
Well, I don't know that Melvin Upton is the Upton that you want to get here, but acquiring Craig Kimbrel, excuse me, at the back of that bullpen there, that's another little thing for them. And maybe it really does cement them as a wild card favorite in the National League. Unfortunately, they ran into Adrian Gonzalez, who's just keeping the Dodgers afloat. Jimmy Rollins stole the first game away from the Padres. So definitely the Padres will be fun to watch this year. And I think that it's probably been a long time since anyone has ever said that.
I want to back up to Jay's lookout Cincinnati Reds comment. We should just put this on every outing until the end of the season. This should be a Reds watch. But Jay Korn has to be feeling good right now. The Reds are 3-0. They're the best team in baseball record-wise right now.
And they're looking strong. And they're not – I mean, you guys all laughed at me. Twitter laughed at me last week. And I don't really care that Cincinnati Reds are going to win the NL Central.
So – I want to feed your madness, Jay. But, yeah, so the Reds are off to a quick start. I don't know. For me, the biggest thing that happened around the league was that Kevin Correa got DFA'd by the Mariners. And then I think then he got DFA'd somewhere else. And then he ended up signing a minor league deal with the Giants this past week. So old pal Kevin Correa is bouncing around. Drew Butera is a backup catcher again. He's in the league. I mean – some of these bad twins, they just won't die.
Well, I'd like to take a moment and talk about my opening day experience. I took the misses to Safeco Field to see King Felix on the mound and the Mariners take on the Angels on opening day. We got to the stadium about an hour before gates opened, stood in line, got a couple of beers, ate some good ballpark food, sat way up in the nosebleeds. We sat right behind home plate on the upper deck level, good seats. Got to see King Felix go throw, you know, 10 strikeouts, one hit. You know, we got to see arguably the best pitcher in the American League face the best player in the American League in Mike Trout 3 times. Mike Trout got the best of King Felix in the first inning and hit a mammoth home run to center field. And then King Felix bested him the next 2 times up with a couple of strikeouts. So It was a fun game to watch. The Mariners went out on top. And all in all, I was really, really pleased with my first opening day ballpark experience.
That's a good report. I like that. That was comprehensive and complete.
Also, on that same opening day, we saw Jared Weaver pitch for the Angels, which was not impressive. He was pumping fastballs all day. I use that term pumping lightly because he averaged 84 miles an hour, which is probably not a speed that anyone has ever remarked about since we started clocking pitchers with radar guns. 84 miles an hour, just that seems remarkably slow in today's world.
Jared Weaver is the definition of crafty veteran, right? I mean,
the guy threw a no-hitter last year, Eric.
Yeah, he threw a no-hitter, fine. But he's just a guy that gets it done with deception and weirdness. I mean, he won 18 games last year. I'm not saying that he's not a guy that just can't still be out there and competing, but 84 miles an hour is not a thing that, I mean, this is like the best possible version of Bruce Chen right now, is what
he's
you're looking at.
He's got a flow factor. He's got good flow.
Well, and I think a lot of that has to do, I mean, if you've got a good changeup, even if you throw 84 miles an hour, I guess you can just get it done on that little bit of deception there. Someone who actually had lights out stuff on opening day, I want to talk about Sonny Gray a little bit.
Yeah.
He has got one of the sexiest curveballs in all of baseball. I mean, you might talk about Clayton Kershaw's curveball, but Sonny Gray with his bender, man, that's a pretty pitch. Makes me a little bit moist in the pants.
Whoa!
And on opening day, he took a no-hitter into the eighth inning, I think, before he surrendered a leadoff hit there. Very impressive. Got those boyish good looks because he's still practically a boy. But that his curveball is just so damn sexy.
Yeah, no, you know, one other guy that I wanted to talk about was Stanton down in Miami. I actually, for some rhyme or reason, had an opportunity to watch, like, every Marlins game so far. And what I can tell you is that everybody is staying away from Stanton. I think he's got, like, 6 walks or something freaking crazy. He's just not going to see a pitch to hit.
Well, and he had a nice defensive play the other day, ranging to his left, full speed, laid out. And then made an unbelievable catch and then threw back to first place to complete the double play. Very impressive. I mean, it's my wife remarked the other day on opening day, we got home from the ballpark, and then I watched 2 more baseball games after we got home. And she says, aren't you ever like going to get to a point where you just get tired of watching baseball? And I said, no. And she's like, is this what our life's going to be every day? Is you just watching MLB TV every day? And I said, yes.
Yep. It sure is.
And then what was her response? Because that's what's really important.
Well, thankfully, my wife is pretty awesome. She likes to knit. So she just picked up her knitting, sat in the recliner, and proceeded to knit for the rest of the evening, which was just fine by me.
That's pretty good. I like that. I will report, I'll give you the full report next week on the Twins home opener experience. The delivering of nachos to Jason, fuck you, Corn, and his Reds, and everything else that happens in Twins territory between now and next week. That's going to do it for us this week on Talk to Contact Podcast. If you haven't already, please, please, please take 3 minutes, rate and review us on iTunes so that we can move up in the ratings. And then when we contact Ethan Mildren to come on the show, we can tell him that we're the 3,000th highest rated Twins podcast on iTunes, and maybe he'll want to come on the show. And we'll see you next week.
It's been fun, boys. Thank you very much.
Go Hoyas.
9th Street Pub.
Hi, is John there?
That's me.
John, it's Egon's.
How are you?
Not bad. We're just doing some recording over at our friend's house, and we actually want a delivery. Can you work that for us?
For Egon's Unicat?
Yeah.
Hey, did anybody talk to you about February 11th?
Yeah, we talked to a band. They want to play at the pub real bad.
Okay.
And we said we'd do it with them.
Let me turn the volume down. You're killing me. One second.
Jeez. Don't be such a namby-pamby.
No bet. Okay, let's do it. What do you got?
All right, we need a chicken marinara sandwich. Broccoli cheddar poppers.
Ranch?
Yeah. Okay. Grilled cheese.
Grilled cheese comes with fries.
All right.
American on white?
American. Yeah, on white. Of course, that's the only way we do it, John. American.
Don't
all the way.
Make me come over there.
Aren't you going to deliver it?
I will, as a matter of fact.
You're delivering it, right?
I'm going to do it personally. I'm going to sit on each one of these boxes.
So you're going to put your mustache on them?
I can't say that because it's not legal. It's a possibility.
All right.
What else would you like?
Next, we need a BLT with extra mayo.
On white?
Yeah. Does that come with a basket of fries?
No.
We need
to roll them out, though.
Yeah, we need a basket of fries. Then after that, I need a cheeseburger in paradise with everything except for sprouts.
Yeah, I think.
How do you want it done? What are my options? How about medium, medium well, rare?
Medium well.
I'll go medium well.
Okay, anything else?
Yeah, we got a couple more things.
Okay.
Yeah. All right, then on top of that, a barbecue roast beef sandwich with fries. And then, to top it all off, a basket of fries just by itself.
I'll give you two baskets of fries. How's that?
I wouldn't mind. I wouldn't be against it.
I'm going to go over this with you, handsome.
All right.
Whoa, whoa.
Are you ready?
Yeah.
You cute little bugger.
Are you ready?
Yeah.
Chicken marinara sandwich.
Got it.
Okay, a broccoli popper.
Yeah.
A cream cheese popper.
Yeah.
A grilled American cheese on white with French fries.
Fucking right, man.
BLT with extra mayo on white.
Yep.
And believe me, we're going to take care of that extra mayo thing. two baskets of French fries.
Yeah.
A paradise, no sprouts, medium well.
Yeah.
And a barbecued roast beef sandwich with French fries.
Yeah.
All right. And that's delivery. Where are you guys at?
28 East Florence Street.
Give me a phone number. I'll call you when I'm on my way.
Just call 25252-27898.
And Sean won't answer it.
No, actually, I will be answering that.
Okay, I'm going to give you a total now.
All right.
Right, you ready?
Yeah.
All right. Let's see.
It's probably like $200 probably.
Get out of Mary Jo's way so she doesn't get mad at me.
Yeah. I know those numbers are tough to add up sometimes.
Don't make me come over there.
You are coming over here, remember?
Well, if I have to, I will.
Are you wearing a denim shirt right now?
No.
What?
It's kind of a...
Hey, what'd you do with that hat? What'd you do with that hat we gave you?
I actually wore it the other day.
Good. That was a damn good hat.
Yeah, it was a good hat. And thank you very much, by the way.
You're welcome.
Oh, Sean, I said that, though. I don't think I'm appreciative or something.
He'll think you want to touch him or something.
$1.50. There it is. Okay. Basket of fries is $1.50. Okay. $4.50. And a barbecue roast beef sandwich. Barbecued roast beef sandwich. $4.50. And fries make it $5.50. Okay, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7. Okay, here we go. 5. 17. 27. 38. 3. 7. 20. 27. 32.
75.
How much does the governor get on 32.85? Let's see. 32.85 plus the governor.
What are you talking about?
The governor.
Oh, the governor. All right.
Well, Goyovich, you try to say that three times real fast.
Nah, that's all right. You can. Try it on the phone right now.
Goyovich, 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 Goyovich. 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 $34.95 is your total, sir.
Can you toss driver in that just for free, maybe? You know, if I had my chance, I'd probably just run him over since he didn't show up in 2 years. I'll see you in about a half hour. All right, sounds good. Give us a call once you get close.
I will.
All right, thanks. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Who do I give the mic to?